thank everybody for coming. I'm going to be explaining what is a hierarchy as I see it, and I'm giving this whole presentation. It came out of teaching, so I was teaching a lot about hierarchy. It came up again and again, the same ideas, and so I thought about it, okay, what is a hierarchy, why? And my prediction is that we're going to see a lot of hierarchies start to collapse. Back to agriculture, when people first got the idea we could actually make plants and animals fit into our plans, and so this is routine domination. It's not exactly slavery, it's the natural world, it's plants and animals. Next slide. But when you start to apply the same idea to people, what can we make these people do that we call slavery? And there's a sort of a division of us. We're us, and they're from another tribe, or we've captured them, or they're black skin colour or something. So that's mainly the start of hierarchy. I'm the boss here, you do what I say. Right, next slide. I think the original idea of hierarchy is to do with differentiation of labour. So maybe somebody was good at hunting animals, and they said, you do this, you do this, you do... But this was temporary, because it depended on the job. And it was a self-subordination. You just said, okay, I'm not good at this, I'll follow those orders. And it was for the common good, and if you caught that animal, oops. So this was maybe a short-term hierarchy, and everybody was thinking, okay, this is a good way to do it. This is not like what we have now. So what is a hierarchy? Then the common features are orders flow down the hierarchy. Maybe that's the big boss who doesn't have a boss, but if you're here, you do what you're told, and information flows up. You can't tell your boss everything, so you say, okay, these things are set, these are the important things. So it's a way of information going up, and nowadays, money goes down as well, because your boss doesn't just give you orders, they give you money, and then if you don't do the orders, you don't get the money. So that's the control. It's a little bit different from slavery, I guess. Next slide. So I've said this is the most important innovation of the last few thousand years.
Is that Hitler and Stalin or Stalin up at some?
Yeah. Well, they wouldn't have a boss, but yeah. Because, okay, next slide. What can you do with this? Well, you can have a boss, and any number of people, any size, any purpose, you can have a few people at the top, maybe just one person, Hitler or Stalin, they're thinking, okay, this is what we want to do. So you imagine if everybody had to meet in a room and discuss it, it wouldn't work. We think this is how organizations are, because they're everywhere. You know, you've got a pope, you've got a prime minister, you've got representatives, education, the law, this is all around us, and it seems like, well, this is just how life is. But if we go back a few thousand years, where were the hierarchies? There was no hierarchy, barely. Maybe you could think, well, there's a family tree, that's the closest you get. So what do people experience of hierarchy? There are people at the very top, they are controlling huge numbers of people. They get a lot of information, or to be more precise, they get a selection of a lot of people's information. Lack of accountability, if you're at the very top, because you can do what you like. Nobody can argue, because you're the boss. Complete dependence on the hierarchy. If you're here, then you don't know how to do these jobs, you just know how to give orders. So if these jobs are about how do you eat, you know, that's your life. You have to keep that. So it's quite an insecure thing to be at the top of the hierarchy. If you're thinking this hierarchy might fail, you fall with it. Okay, for the many, this is most of us here. Our experience, you get orders. So a lack of autonomy, because you have to follow the orders. What you want is not important. Lack of transparency, because you can't see what does my work actually do. Why am I doing this? You're just doing it because you're told to. People are monitoring you, checking that you're doing what you're told, and you're insecure. Because the system doesn't depend on you. It can't depend on you. It can't depend on any one part. So if you don't do your job, they'll find someone else who'll do your job for you. So it's insecurity. Next slide. Right, so this is Athenian democracy. They had a power structure. Power structure, yep. Okay, complex power structure. Who did what? But this is quite old. So this is they're just forming, this is how our hierarchy works. And it's quite different because it didn't have a permanent post. So you didn't get to be, this is your job, you can't change jobs. If you were not ready to take any of these jobs, I think there's one or two military jobs were different, but it's full of jobs that you would take for 6 months or for a year, then you will pick up another job and you do a different job randomly. So, they didn't have people who only knew how to do a tiny little thing. If somebody was speaking, it was what did they do in the last 6 months in this job? And people knew all about that job because they'd had that job. And people didn't relate in a long-term basis. They didn't get cozy little corruption scandals. You didn't know who your boss was going to be. So that was how they prevented tyranny. But most of them had private slaves. Okay, so this is a Roman angle. I mean, this is still, we talk about separation of powers. This is still taught today. Different hierarchies which are balanced against one another. So, if you've got a corrupt judge, they're deciding about what's legal and what's illegal. You've got a corrupt judge, you still got to follow the law written by another hierarchy. Maybe you've got a corrupt president, well, he's supposed to be following this law. The religious hierarchy, separate again. So, if all these were all organized together, well, that's a problem, but it's deliberately try to separate them, okay? So, I'm zapped forward to the 17th century, because I'm mainly focusing on the immediate collapse of the hierarchy, and this is where I... Were you here for the last... Hands up if you were at the last... year and a half ago. About banking. Okay, some of you. Right, well I was speaking about... This is public awareness. If you say, who runs your country? Who runs the country? The head of the government, the king, the prime minister, or if you're a businessman, you say, my bank manager runs me. But actually there's a power here, which is the financier oligarchy class. And the last presentation, A History of Plutocracy, I described where they came from and why they're organized internationally. That's very important, that you can't run one country from inside the country. You need a larger group. Why do I suggest that they're in charge? Well, they organize the money, and they have the power to create money out of nothing. Yes, governments get elected, and they have policies, a lot of opportunities for bribery. The power in business to say, you get a loan, you don't get a loan, I need that money back now, is the power to decide what happens and what doesn't happen. Next slide. So they are, the financiers gain control of the national currencies, and this is where the main point from the history of plutocracy. Right, now they control the national currencies, what next? Public awareness again. Kings fighting wars, or queens I guess, but national wars between separate countries. Why? Well, they thought it was the kings who were in charge, right? But in internationally organized oligarchs, they're managing the money system.
What's the word oligarch? Never heard of it before.
Okay, well a monarch is one arc. Yeah. Oligarch is a several arc, okay. But not many, just a little club, a little elite. That's the House of Rothschild. They're that crest there that were the most important. They had five sons, and a chap whose sons these were sent them off to different countries, to England, France, Germany, Austria, Italy, I think, because he could see he needed to have influence in several countries. So, if they got money, money doesn't control, I mean, if you're inside a country and the king wants to say, well, off with the head, he can do that. So why wouldn't he do that? Well, the only power he's likely to respect is somebody coming to invade his country. And he loses the government, that's the real power. So these wars, it's not a coincidence, this is one of the hidden corners of history. I just learnt lots of wars and dates, and they never seemed to quite be one big winner. It was always in the balance. But it was kept in the balance by people who didn't want one king to become too powerful. Because if all the kings are worried about the next war, they all need to think, where am I going to get the weapons? And it's easy for this small group of people to say, okay, this person's been following orders, we're going to sell a lot of weapons to him and make sure that he takes out his noisy neighbours who aren't listening to us. So this was a century or so of consolidation where they had control over the national powers. They wanted to be quite clear that they were in charge of this whole system and that governments listened to them straight away. This is a piece of research that I'd like to look into more, which I haven't found on the web, on the internet. The conditions of loans. I've got two sources to tell me that they gave loans on condition that you will repay the debts if you defeated a country. Now, I found this piece of international law. When one government collapses and is replaced by another government on the same territory, then it has to take over the debts of the earlier government. And that's international law, and that obviously suits whoever is holding the debts.
You mean Britain and the USA had to take Germany's debts after World War II?
Yes, yeah. They had sort of a whole series of reparations and taking all the sorts of gold out. But that means that whoever loses and whoever wins, well, all the debts get paid. So the war was a good result for the bankers, because in war people borrow a lot of money and they're not very prudent, they can't afford to be. And if there's a war, that's destroying a lot of people's property, a lot of money spent on weapons, so people become poor again, they need to borrow money to rebuild it. So war is the great debt generator. As long as the debts get repaid, and that was what this was about. So, okay, the real truth of the matter, this is from President Roosevelt, presumably was supposed to be a secret letter. The real truth of the matter is, as you and I know, that a financial element in the larger centres has owned the government ever since the days of Andrew Jackson. So the government is basically left there for show, because people like to think that they can make an input and choose between two different parties, both of which have already been bought.
It hasn't changed, I guess.
No. What I think has changed is that people are becoming more aware of it. Now, that's debatable. But you've got these guys, now they don't need money. That's very important to see, because they control the money system. So they have any amount of money. So what do they need? Well, they've got to swap that paper money for a claim on something real. They want to be in control. These guys want power. So they want houses, they want land, they want factories. They set up the rules, because they're pretty much running the government now, and there was, you know, the American government had rights for citizens, which was sort of annoying, because they weren't very interested in rights for citizens. But by a steady process of clawing these rights in, we got the doctrine of legal personhood. So what does that say? A company, a corporation, is legally a person. Why is that important? Well, people have got rights according to the Constitution. So, what was set up early on to protect people and give them their independent rights, the same document, the US Constitution, is now being used by corporations to say, we have rights too. Rights to privacy, rights not to be searched and seized by the government, and so on. And originally, corporations were chartered for a limited period, and then they were dissolved. And they weren't allowed to buy other corporations, and if they broke the law, they were dissolved on the spot. But they were changed by people with a lot of money to spend into these privileged systems. And what was the next technology which came online? Cheap oil. Cheap energy, mass production. Very suited to hierarchy. You give one order, I want this, I want McDonald's here, I want one here, I want one here. Very high energy, that's what we've got. Now, what are the roles of the people here? People, on the mass production, are doing very limited tasks time and time again. So, people are becoming dependent on the system. If you're a farmer and you own your own land and you do your own farming, you don't need someone to set up a factory. if you're a factory worker and your dad was a factory worker and you only know how to do this, they've got you where they want you. The ideas is very important too. Televisions didn't go both ways, not like email. So very expensive to set up a television station, very expensive to make a movie. What happens when you do? Well, people can watch it. Draw your own conclusions about the sort of things that people watch. So that was mass broadcasting 20th century. It's changed next century. It's control of ideology. Very important. Same thing with schooling. Did everybody here go to school? What about somebody who didn't go to school? Shouldn't they be ashamed? Shouldn't they feel stupid? Because they've got their own ideas rattling around, not the ideas of the teacher. Remember, I'm the teacher. I'm going to test you. Memorize this. So, teacher knows, you don't know because you're a stupid kid, if you learn enough things, you can get promoted. They want a hierarchy. They've got to stop people getting in high positions in the hierarchy who aren't going to follow orders. So how do you test if somebody's going to follow orders? You give them a load of stupid orders, like memorizing dates and names of battles without really knowing why. If you do it all, then you pass. So, and when you finish, you know, university, you get more qualifications. And it's, we talk about, oh, we're giving people a lift, we're giving them more ideas, more intelligence. But they don't talk about, well, they're actually testing obedience, but there's a heavy indoctrination component. Because the curriculum is what you have to study. It doesn't matter what you want to study, they tell you, these are important ideas, these are not important ideas, don't learn about these things. And the history books are full of lies, and pretty much every other subject. In one at my school, I picked up, it said in the Bhopal, do you remember the Bhopal tragedy? It said in the Bhopal disaster, chemical factory blew up in an Indian city, it said hundreds of people were killed. Which is true in a way. I mean, you go to Wikipedia, it's talking about thousands. So is the book lying? Probably in a court of law it's not lying, but it's misleading. And the key one to see in yourself, you know, loving the fatherland, loving the motherland. What's this land? It's created an emotional attachment. You know, when you're 5 years old, when you hear something, that becomes very important. So your love, your affection for your family, somehow they're trying to transfer it and say that's how you should feel about this national government, which could send you off to war one day, and you'd be fighting for your father country, so feel good about it. Right, this is economics, my main focus. Now, you know about supply and demand. Well, if you've seen a supply and a demand curve, that's measured in terms of money. So if you don't have any money, then you don't have any demand. So that's Bangladesh, 150 million people here. Is it any wonder that the flowers are getting shipped out of Africa for the Europeans? Because Europeans have got money to pay for flowers. But Africans don't, so if you're any kind of a businessman, you'll notice, well, there's no demand for anything over here, so it's not surprising that they're hungry. And economists are more selfish than non-economists. Now, whether that's because selfish people, they like the idea of economics, or whether the training makes them selfish, is still a matter for debate. Very famous experiment on obedience. 1961. Do you know the Milgram experiment, Hansa?
No.
Okay, if you don't, then you've just replied to a newspaper ad that says, we need your help to test memory. Somebody here is going to be trying to remember things, and you just say, if he gets it right, then you press one button. If he gets it wrong, you press another one. You flip a switch. That's giving him an electric shock. And that's all your job. And to begin with, it's a small voltage, and then we're going to see if he remembers better when he gets a heavier electric shock. Now, this guy was an actor, so the experiment is all about, is he going to flip the switches when he's told to flip the switches? I mean, if the experiment had been you've got to poke somebody through the eye with a knitting needle, then people wouldn't do it. But flip a switch? So, he asked the leading psychologists of his day, how many people, when I say flip the switch, we'll flip the switch. And they said, well, not many, because, you know, that could kill him. And it was, you know, it was marked danger. You got the impression that could kill somebody. And they said could be not more than 1% of people would be ready to give a fatal shock. And they were surprised, because it wasn't one, it was 65% of people were ready to give that electric shock. So, a shocking thought for them. Now, okay, my understanding is then healthy, ordinary people do not do that sort of thing. I mean, it's easier to flip a switch and not think about it than physically kill somebody, but you do not do that. Unless you know that whatever somebody says, that's what you have to do. Unless you've already learnt that. I mean, he's a lab coat guy, he's got the authority, he's got the status. And that helps understand another very distressing... Have you heard of false flag terrorism? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well this is, if you do a terrorist attack, but then you blame it on somebody else. And a lot of the terrorist attacks that we're told we have to be afraid of are actually done by the security services on the people of the same country. So why would they do that? Other people, the oligarchs and their agents, want to have a war. And people don't like wars, so how can you persuade people? We do need a war after all. You make them feel afraid. You make them feel like they're being threatened. And this is a standard way of starting wars. If you look at Hitler, he was defending Germany from the wicked Poles. You look at Vietnam, Tonkin Gulf, there's a long history of the aggressors blaming it on someone else. So that's in the military context. Now we have the idea, well, we're supposed to be a democracy, so we're supposed to be something about representing the will of the people. So if the leaders want to go to war, they have to arrange for the people to feel like at least some of them want to go to war. So there's a couple of recent ones. 1999 apartment bombings in Russia, the series of bombings. September the 11th attacks, which have been well studied. These ones are not so well studied. Right, next slide. There's some references here if you want to look this up. But the FSB, the Russian successor to the KGB, an explosive in the bottom of the building at night. I mean, you know, in your own home, any time of day or night, people were blown up. And Putin was glad he was in charge of the FSB until just before this set of bombings was organized, and it was to start another war on Chechnya. And September the 11th, similar idea, they arranged these attacks. If you look into it at all closely, you'll see that it's nothing like what the media have been saying. They wanted to get control of Iraq for the oil and Afghanistan for the pipeline, possibly the opium. But maybe another major one is the domestic police state, because if people are afraid, if they're really panicking about Muslims, then you can justify controlling them. You can justify scanning them when they go through airports, all the supervision, taking away their rights, which we'll look at later. Okay, I mean, this is a slightly... we're going to have a break in a few minutes, but this is a slightly pessimistic note on which to end, but it does end happily, at least. Not actually ended, but I don't want you to feel too depressed. But I'm looking at hierarchy here. We've talked about these false flag attacks. Why? Because hierarchy is very, very vulnerable to this type of deception. Because the whole idea is, he's the guy, he knows what you have to do. You just follow whatever you're told to do. So he's got some orders, and in theory, he breaks those orders into little pieces, passes them down, but he doesn't always follow theory because he could change those orders, and who would know? So if the boss goes rogue, he can change the orders, and suddenly those team of committed people could be doing completely the opposite of what they thought they were doing. This is only possible because it's a hierarchy. There's one person at the top is supposed to be in charge of all those other people. Compartmentalization is a standard technique for secret services. So if you're part of some undercover plan, you're not told the whole plan, you're just told your tiny little piece, so that if you get captured, well, you can't tell the whole story because you don't know the whole story. Plans are broken into small pieces. If you're a subordinate, you're just given one piece of the plan. When you see that, well, you're just doing something. You're putting something somewhere, whatever it is. You can't see the whole plan. Okay? If you could see the whole plan, well, then you'd know. But it's a hierarchy, so that's the technique of compartmentalization. So I'm not saying that everybody in the Secret Services is wicked and doing bad plans, but the organisation itself can do so because of the hierarchy.
Is it WTC World Trade Centre?
Could be World Trade Centre, for example. Okay, secret society. I mean, we've got these governments, corporations, other openly hierarchical institutions, we know, well, he's the boss, he's the senior directors, we know they have a hierarchy, and they follow it, and they've got minutes, and so on. What we're not aware of is that not everybody here follows these plans, and there are secret hierarchies, secret societies, which can use these legitimate organizations, well, okay, fairly legitimate. Who's heard of the Bilderberg Group? Has that? Okay, not many. Right. Quick summary. Started in 1953. They've met every year. Their members are leaders of big companies, you know, IBM, Shell, Texaco, the biggest of the big. National political leaders, some members of royalty, UK, Sweden, Denmark, not Sweden.
Is that the thing they call the family? Is that something else?
I don't. That may be something else. Okay. I mean, there are a few of these. Bilderberg is the most famous, because you might think if you had 100, 150 people meeting of this nature, that would be in a newspaper somewhere. But until very recently, it had almost complete blackout. I mean, people who've been working as journalists for 20 years, they haven't heard about this. And if they're meeting, they're not protected by somebody's random security company. It's the National Security Service which protects their meetings and keeps it secret. So quite important, influential people. That was the Bilderberg Group. I mean, as others you may have heard of.
What do you call it?
The Bilderberg Group.
It's a name?
Yeah, it was at the Bilderberg Hotel in 1953. The idea of the secret hierarchy, you can have a hierarchy that needs something done. Maybe it needs a law changed, or it needs some records, or it needs a company to do something in a certain way. But they just say, all right, who have we got in Microsoft? Who have we got in Google? And they can organize the same way companies organize, and they're using these people in the hierarchy, but they have a higher loyalty. And you can research. Freemasonry is another organization. I don't know the details. I haven't gone into depth. But these organizations do exist, and we are not told about them. Okay, next slide. Right, so this is the public picture of 2001. This is how it was used after it was created. People were panicked. You get somebody who says, oh, I'm the decider. So, oh, well, there's a war on terrorism. And people were panicked into following a carefully thought-out set of plans to take away the civil liberties. So, instead of having separation of powers, it was a de-separation of powers. Legislative people were signing statements which were intended to clarify the law, were used by Bush. When he signed a law, he would make an exception if he didn't like the law. He would say, oh, by the way, when I said this, this is how I choose to interpret it, and signed it. It's basically, you make a promise, but you keep your fingers crossed the promise doesn't count. So that was a legal way to get around the law, if you like. Political appointees, where you put in the judges who are members of your secret society, you know that they're going to vote your way. And people were conditioned, well, this is what we need. We can't hang around because we're fighting the terrorists. Okay, next slide. What's not mentioned is the bigger picture, public awareness. You're not told that these were actually funded by CIA. So they're actually performing orders. The whole show is control. They want to control the whole show. And people have other loyalties. But this larger angle, which is necessary to understand what's going on, is never mentioned. Psychopathy is not always what you see in the movies. It's actually, however you pronounce it, it's a mental problem, and you know, somebody's born without legs that work, some people are born without a conscience that works. But in the society that we live in, having lack of conscience actually helps you to get ahead in organizations, because you can dedicate yourself to a goal. You don't have to worry about who's going to drink that poisonous stuff that you tip into the river. You just focus on the bottom line. So, lack of guilt, I mean, politicians are very commonly psychopaths. It helps them. They're very good at lying because they don't have the normal emotional feelings that people have. They don't feel guilt. So if they stand up and they don't appear to be feeling any guilt, a normal person will think, okay, well, he's not guilty. Superficial charm, selfishness, parasitic lifestyle. I mean, how could you be a banker and not notice that you never do anything much, and that you rely on everybody else. They ruthlessly dominate the power hierarchy, and this is important to understand. They are very insecure because they don't have loving relationships. Their way of thinking, they know that they can be cruel and ruthless to people, and they imagine that other people can treat them like that in the same way. I'm not an expert about psychopathy, but it's one of the key insights which helped me to make this presentation and helped me to understand why very commonly that things were going completely the opposite way from the way that they were advertised. The secret services are actually there doing the reverse of what they say. They ruthlessly dominate power hierarchies. That's how they get their security. And they work together. They recognize other psychopaths and work together with them. So, full spectrum dominance, which is this is the world's defense spending, and this blue country here, that's 48, but this was 2008, I don't know the latest one, but that's about half of all the money spent on weapons in the world is spent by the US, which is a slightly sort of psychopathic approach. It's the Defense Department, yeah? Well, who are they defending themselves against? They think the rest of the world is going to team up against them. Well, this is the thought of the psychopath. They can't have enough powerful weapons. They've got to be in control. They would like to control everybody and everything, and that's what this doctrine means. That's why they're trying to militarize space.
Robin, what are the two big ones?
Yeah.
Europe.
Yeah. Europe, okay.
20%.
Yeah.
China, 8%.
Okay.
And this is East Asia, Australasia,
yeah.
North Africa, Russia, Latin America, South Africa, sub-Saharan Africa. Where they have so little food, well, they also have so little weapons. Is that connected somehow?
What about Russia?
Russia's here.
Yeah. Okay, yes.
Okay.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. So, psychopathic aggression is called defense. Enemy combatant. Anybody know why they invented this term, enemy combatant?
Not to use the Geneva Convention.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. Because prisoners of war have rights, they said, well, this is the war on terrorism, but not that kind of a war.
So,
if you get designated an enemy combatant, and they can designate anybody an enemy combatant, then that's it. They can take you away for enhanced interrogation. You don't want that. Okay. This is from the US Department of Defense instructions that people who are protesting should be treated like low-level terrorists. Mm. So now they feel very threatened by people demonstrating disobedience. Okay, there's a quote from David Rockefeller. Some ideological extremists even believe the Rockefeller family is part of a secret cabal conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global, political, and economic structure. One world, if you will. If that's the charge, I stand guilty, and I'm proud of it. So this is the new world order, new financial, political, military. Now this is globalization. We're now in the 21st century. I mean, a lot of national organizations, which felt some loyalty and some accountability to people, are being eclipsed. There's being an international layer, a European layer, which we don't have much of a vote on, or we don't even know about in some cases. This has been organized by the people who have the influence over the national governments. Now, even on paper, people are not even supposed to be able to control this new layer of leaders. So this is the mistaken ideology of hierarchy in red, that an organization has to be a hierarchy. Well, we know that's not true. You can have decentralized systems. Hierarchy is a meritocracy, so that the people get to the top because they're the best, because they're the smartest, whatever. Well, actually, at the very top of hierarchies, it's all corrupt. It doesn't work the way they say it works. Violent competition is just how it is, because, you know, Darwin said it, you don't fight as hard as the next guy, you're going to starve, so we should be proud because we're still alive. But actually, that again is a misrepresentation of how nature works. All of nature is about cycles and giving to one another and nurturing, and that's very uncommon. And might is right, because, yeah, it's ordained. So if we can control the world, then we should do it. But non-psychopathic people don't feel like that. They feel that then much more of a calling towards equality, towards loving everybody and everything, and allowing everything to have its own place. Right, okay, this is a quick summary of how money works, very quick summary. Money comes from the financial oligarchs who control the whole system. They lend money into existence, it's important they don't give it. And then banks, which make up money, they create money out of nothing, lend it again. You, at the bottom, have to give it back with interest, and then they pass it back to the central banks with interest. Which is an interesting question, because where does that come from? If you're not allowed to make your own money, you've got to borrow it, you've got to pay it back with more. How are you supposed to do that? Well, you go to economic classes or business school, they'll say, well, it's because you made a profit. You should be good at making a profit, that's being mighty and righty. But you get that money from someone else, they're in a worse situation. So the only way you can get it is from the financial oligarchs via the banks. So you're forced to compete for scarce money. There will never be enough money to go around, because any time money comes into the system, you're saying it's going to leave the system with more. That will drain any amount of money from the system. And you want to pay your taxes, you want to stay legal, you want to have a car, you've got to pay insurance. The system is now working, it's a partnership between the banks, the oligarchs, and the governments. And both of them are dependent on each other. And individual people, this is a good point at which to break the dirty secret of The Economist. Because they've got all these theories about exponential growth and interest. And we know, actually, that things are not going to grow forever. We can't cut down trees or take fish from the sea forever, because there's only so much. And this is proving to be a problem. Well, that's a good point to which to take a break, I think. The ecological collapse is not factored into economic models. They're about making money, interest rates, money supply, goods. They don't talk much about the real world. So, assuming unlimited resources, which says, well, okay, we're running out of trees or fish. Well, that means the price will go up. Somebody will work out an alternative, because they've got more incentive to. But this is not about all the ecological crisis. You probably know a lot about the ecological crisis. The point is that they're happening, and economics can do nothing about them. So business is going to crash. And is this a surprise? Well, my point is that the system is largely run by psychopaths. And you might have noticed a lot of these targets. They're going to cut their emissions by 2050 sometime. It always tends to be when they're long dead. So they just keep doing what they're doing, and they don't think about the impact on the future generations. So this is one resource, it's an important resource, it's oil. First dug up, orange is the real price, ignore the blue one. So originally, very expensive, when it was first used, the price went down when they worked out some good technology. Price has been pretty low, oil shock here, and now it's going up. And if it goes down again, that's just because there's so much business has shut down that there isn't the demand there. It's going to go up again. So, we have a low energy future ahead. There are other energy sources. They all have the same problem. We're running out of these ones, at least for mass use. So, solar panels is a small amount of energy. We have a chaotic, this is important, a chaotic future ahead. Low energy. And it's chaos. Things are not going to work the way that we think they're going to work. This is a problem for hierarchy. Hierarchy is not fast moving. Hierarchy works according to the fixed plans. You don't change those plans so quickly. A lot of different systems, if we have an energy failure, then we see how interdependent they are. If there's no energy one day, in Bangladesh, you know, you have hours, most days, without electricity. So, if there's no electricity, you can't run your banking. If you can't run your banking, how are you supposed to do your business or make the decisions? Oh dear, all these systems are interlocking, and they expect that the other systems are working. So we built this technology up piece by piece, and people didn't think, well, one day maybe we won't have electricity, yeah? One day maybe we can't give a slide presentation. So cascading failures. A small piece goes wrong, a lot of the system doesn't work. One of the things about globalization, one of the good sides about making all the places and all the countries much more similar, the same languages, the same names, and you get the same shops, the same logos in Bangladesh, the same problems. If I stood up as a politician and said, it's the French who started it, they're the cause of all the trouble, then you look at France, it's the same as Denmark. There's a great similarity now. And you look at Bangladesh, more and more people are realizing, okay, this is the situation. And a large number of people have very small amount of wealth, very small amount of actual power, a very small number of people have a large amount. And this is now a global thing, so it's not Christians against Muslims, and we have the tools to work globally. I'm thinking particularly of the internet, of course, because this is 21st century broadcasting, narrowcasting, is having a blog. How many, who reads your blog? People from all around the world can get in touch without a lot of expense. This is Wikipedia, so this was 100th most popular website, the 10,000th most popular, so 2003. And this is Britannica, the standard encyclopedia, and this is the one that people built, which has got more and more popular over time. Now it's maybe in the top 10. Very popular in lots of languages. And that's the idea, that small contributions by a lot of people can be more effective than having one big master plan and making everybody follow it, because people can contribute when they feel like it. Well, they're both centralized, so don't look at Wikipedia for the truth about the September the 11th attacks. We can improve on this technology, I'm on the case, but the grassroots organizations...
Robin?
Yeah?
Would you, say a little bit more about that? Before, you said that it's centralised.
Centralised.
Are you saying that it's being checked and being
yes.
manipulated?
Yes.
Okay.
If you go to a Wikipedia page and you see a padlock, that's a bad sign. They'll say this page is protected against vandalism. I mean, the most clear example, if you want to look into this September 11th, is the World Trade Center 7, which is the third tower which was demolished on that day.
Mm.
Two of them were hit and were then collapsed. This one wasn't hit and it just blew itself up anyway. And Wikipedia has an amazing piece of fiction about how this happened. And you will not be able to change it because there's a little padlock in the corner saying the vandalism that they're referring to is people trying to put the truth in there.
Mm.
Because it has a website, there is one place which is holding all the Wikipedia records, which, if somebody wanted to, and they had political or financial clout, they could control and look at Wikipedia. And when you look at, see the padlock, that's a sign. If you can look through the history of the page, you can say, okay, well, why has this been padlocked? And you get an idea about some of the links. The 9/11 Truth Movement doesn't have a centre. There's nobody in charge of it. There's nobody running it. If you want to shut it down, that's a problem. This is how the hierarchy is thinking. Well, we take the leaders out, and then the movement's finished. But if there are no leaders, this is a decentralized organization. This is another way of organizing, which is non-hierarchical. International these days, it's not hard to translate between languages. It's much easier than 100 years ago, 200 years ago. Sending messages around the world, much easier now. Okay?
Do you want to explain the transition network, or are you coming back to
it? Transition network, we've just been to Copenhagen, a transition towns meeting, and their main idea is that we are running out of energy and resources. So the way that life used to be, lots of oil to drive around in cars, get blueberries from Chile, that's going to change. And if we prepare for it, it could be really good news. We can have a local, community-based system. We won't feel like other people are in charge of our lives because we could be growing our own food. We might not have some of the things we've got now. We might not feel like we need them. People used to make their own entertainment. They didn't need people in Danmarksradio to tell them how they should spend their evenings. So we went to Copenhagen and we put fire on the map with those guys. We were 1% of the fire population. I don't think there were any other islands with as many.
Mm-hmm.
But we put forward an idea They've got a lot of stuff on windmills, permaculture, how to grow your own food, planting lots of nut trees around the place, because it's a legacy we can give to future generations. Mainly, there's almost none in the countries of the south. It's mainly Europe, Australia, but I'm interested in doing that in Bangladesh. Indy Media Centre is another website. You could go to indymedia.org, which is news put up by citizens with digital cameras rather than journalists. So they're telling a different story. So people in these networks, it's non-hierarchical, they haven't got a boss, so they're doing what they feel like. They're not following someone else's agenda, so it's complex. They've got a richness here. They need a consensus. You know, you can't say, look, I'm your boss, you do this. You can't push your weight around. You have to charm people. You have to persuade them that they want to do it. So there is more friendship, more relationships. And they're creative, because people are in flow. People are doing the things they feel that they are committed to doing. So they're adaptable. So these are the non-hierarchical networks. If you change them, they can live with it. They're not like a fixed agenda of a hierarchy. So 2003, Barbara Streisand, for some reason, didn't want this photo of her house on the internet, so she's threatening the people who put it on the internet with $10 million lawsuit. Take it off the internet at once. You've got 18 days to do this. What happened, of course? Well, they took it off and everybody else spread it widely. And now it turns up in presentations like this. So you really can't suppress information anymore. Like, it's on the web, it's out there. So false flag terror attacks are very risky nowadays because information can spread so widely and so fast. Digital cameras are cheap. You've got one in your pocket, you record one conversation, the whole thing is not what it was 50 years ago, 20, even 20 years ago. That's a website you can't get to from Denmark unless you go to another website. I've been there, you can surf there, but you need a little bit of work. The government has decided that's not a good website for you to go to, because you can get almost any movie these days. So effectively copyright law doesn't work because of a technology there. But that's not very hard to set up. WikiLeaks is where people put government documents or company documents, any kind of confidential information they think the world should know about. One of these, the Australian government said, oh, isn't child porn terrible? We need to stop pictures of children being on the internet. We're going to stop these websites from even getting to Australia. So if you're in Australia, you can't use the, we need a list, we're going to ban the certain websites and we'll put all the child porn websites on the list. That was the policy of the Australian government just a year or two ago, I think. And then the list of banned websites turned up on WikiLeaks, because it was one of these secret documents somebody published. And would you be surprised to hear, one of those wicked websites that nobody should ever be allowed to go to, was WikiLeaks. So the legislation that they said was all about child pornography and stopping naughty perverts from looking at dirty pictures, also stopped ordinary people from finding out about leaked government secrets, or not only government secrets, corporate secrets. So that's another website. I think you can get there from Denmark. That one you can't, but as I say, it's easy to get round. False flag terror is now widely understood. People can see. There's people saying, shall we charge Rumsfeld and Bush with war crimes? Another website, if you download it, that's an excellent summary of false flag terrorism. And it's, you know, it's not always... You can't see it, no, but if you download it, I'll give you the web address in this presentation later. Historycommons.org, yeah. They've done a lot of work, and that's another citizens' website. So ordinary people have put up little bits of information, and they're telling a story, a lot of references. You put it, you see one of them, you can't see the picture, you put them all together. It's really not anything like you're being told in newspapers. That was where we were. No understanding of oligarchy. Public awareness was largely defined by newspapers, by television, by what could be controlled through the hierarchy. That's changing. People are sharing information more effectively because they now have the tools. So This is a problem for these guys. Expansion of public awareness. People are seeing, what is the Bilderberg group? Why are people doing this? Some of these people are being outed. Looking at decentralized network, then it's tolerant of multiple failures. So if somebody doesn't do their job, something happens, they can't work, well, other people are still in touch, they're still passing ideas, the network can adjust. What about the single point of failure in the hierarchy? Then if the boss isn't there one day, what do these guys do? They don't really know, because their whole time is, I just wait and I do what I'm told to do. So this is hierarchy, and it's not very tolerant of failure. These failures are going to come due to lack of energy, due to the unpredictable circumstances. When people are not being forced to do things, it's not as easy to subvert these people. These people are more likely to be doing it because they want to do it, not because they're being forced to do it. They're more likely to have an ethos, have a set of ideas, a passion that motivates them. These people just often doing it just because they feel like they have to do it. So if somebody comes with more money and says, well, today you're working for me, will you do this? They're more likely to be subverted. So in the future world, we should be looking not to rely on these organizations, but having a network. So I talked about psychopaths as running these organizations. They're often in charge, but they are only about 1% of humanity. So how can another 99% of people go along with these things? Well, we saw that there's an ethos, so to get people to obey, they have ideologies. You remember, anybody recognize that chap?
No.
Michael Douglas?
Yes.
Wall Street.
Yes. So that's, greed is good. You know, these super bankers, they're just smarter, they're brighter, they're super intelligent, they're financial wizards. We've got to respect these guys. We've not got to see them as they really are, parasites on the rest of us, but we have psychopathic value sets. I mean, you know, we don't like to do harm to people, but we have been taught all day, people who are good in business, you've got to respect these guys. Making money, that's what it counts. And it's hard to get outside of that. Our whole culture is immersed in this. So these people, underdeveloped people, they should just work harder, they should be smarter, they should have more technology. You say, well, the North is living from the cheap products that they get from the South, then they say, well, you know, we should be smarter. So the property of the rich is most important. It's more important than the lives of the poor. I mean, in some ways I hate to live here in Western Europe, because I see how out of touch people are compared to living in Bangladesh, where family is really important and life and death is important. People are aware of that. Some people are aware of that every day. And people here are in some kind of mixed up dream world. But I won't go on about that. I added this slide later. This is the economics value that just reduces everything to money. It's just a spreadsheet. So these people who are cutting down rainforests, they're probably not thinking about trees. They've just got plan A and plan B, and they're just putting them into action and remote control. Anybody heard of the Summers memo?
No.
Okay. Well, this is Lawrence Summers, and I owe him one thing, which is a great example of what I wanted to put forward, which is the utter perversity and the inhumanity of the established wisdom, what people think of as common sense and the way things should be. He was not an economist, but the chief economist of the World Bank, supposed to be eradicating poverty, these guys, and he wrote, I think the economic logic behind dumping a load of toxic waste in the lowest wage country is impeccable, and we should face up to that. I've always thought that underpopulated countries in Africa are vastly underpolluted. Because, you know, if you have toxic waste here in Denmark, that could cost a lot of money. But what about in India, sub-Saharan Africa? These guys' lives aren't worth very much in terms of lost earnings, and that's how it's rated in economics. This cap and trade in the quota system is exactly the same idea. It's applying the market framework, and that suits the people who have a lot of money very well. And hats off to this guy who called him on this, José Lutzenberger, Brazil's Secretary of the Environment, when I mean, he wasn't intending that that memo came out. But he said, your reasoning is perfectly logical, but totally insane. Your thoughts provide a concrete example of the unbelievable alienation, reductionist thinking, social ruthlessness, and arrogant ignorance of many conventional economists concerning the nature of the world we live in. So, respect to José Luxemburger. Now, you might think that would be the last that, that Summers would have done, but apparently he was well connected, because rather than being sacked, he was promoted. He's since worked as Secretary of the US Treasury, President of Harvard University. Currently, under President Obama, he's Director of the White House National Economic Council. Whereas José Luxemburger never worked in politics again. No, he can't make that kind of statement. You can't speak truth to power. So this is a call to you. If you feel this is you, you're going in one direction, a lot of things are going the other direction, then you may be aware of a thing called cognitive dissonance. People don't like ideas that don't fit with what they think they know, so it's hard for people to change their mind. And this is just a list of many, many biases. You need to read them all, but things like, you know, the ostrich effect, nobody likes to hear bad news. If you're committed to doing one thing, it's a wrench to turn around. So there's a lot of psychological reasons why it's not easy to listen. If you used to believe something, and then just because something's true, doesn't make it easy to take on board. You have a bias to believing things you already believe. And if everybody is saying this, and it appears to be a lot of different sources confirming it, you think that's true. When you look for an idea and people are supporting it, you think, yes, that's case closed. If you put a lot of effort into going in one direction, say you wanted to get rich and make a lot of money, and somebody says, well, no, that's not going to help you in life, you feel because you're committed to it, you don't want to take on that on board. Herd instinct, the group think, the just world phenomenon. You know, it's not nice to accept that the world is run by psychopaths. People don't like that kind of idea. It would be nicer if you could believe what they told you in school. Self-serving interest, because we live in the West and we might have quite comfortable lives. People say, well, you know, it's easy to just ignore other spiral of silence. Wishful thinking. So I don't know the details of these. I read up on them. And they're all recognized, and there's very many of them explain why facts alone is not sufficient to persuade people that they're wrong. So, I've said we've got one guy at the top who is actually a psychopath, and a lot of people following orders because that's what everybody in this company does. Let's have a look at why follow those orders. I mean, one thing is self-interest. Psychopaths are quite aware of that. They grease palm. One thing is you could be afraid what's going to happen if you speak out. It doesn't fit the idea that you should be doing something else. You don't like that. And there's a distance in the technology. You know, those people who are dying, they're not dying here. We don't see them on fire. You hear about them, but you're distanced from it. Peer pressure, because everyone else is going along, you think, well, why should I make a fuss? Indoctrination is a big one, emotionally. You feel like, well, that wouldn't be the right thing to argue with the boss, whatever. Indoctrination is important. And psychopathic values we've taken on board. We don't think about the other side of the coin, which is, I think, innate in everybody. I think most people, healthy people, love life. They want a clean conscience. We may be used to just doing things in work that, well, this is work. I treat my family well, but in business, things are different. Self-actualization, which is a psychological term, which means doing the things which you feel are the best things that you can do. Not just doing a stock job that somebody's given, but your unique, your personal talents. And that's a very powerful thing for the young, especially. They're not used to giving in. So, we have a threat of violent repression. And the military technology, we spoke in the break, I think a lot of the military technology is being worked and developed and bought and researched not for foreign wars, but to control the people, control the poor and make them follow orders. A lot of laws have been changed in the US so that people can come straight from Iraq, now they can police the US streets. So one, when you're violently repressed, sometimes you think, well, we've got to fight these guys. Sometimes you just get afraid and you surrender. There's no point surrendering if people are not going to show you any mercy. That's an odd thought. But if you knew these people, they never give us any mercy anyway, then there is little point in surrendering. So if their truly psychopathic character is to repress and not think about people, there's a possibility that people will have less impulse to surrender. So as communication improves worldwide and people can see what's going on, it is possible that they will be courageous instead of being fearful. So this is where we're at, a dividing in the ways. There are different hierarchies, not all of them malevolent, and they make change. They say, okay, well, we're facing a low resource situation, let's not do things the old way, or they may fight to keep control. If they fight to keep control, then fight without resources. I mean, within countries and between countries, people saying, well, we represent the interests of the rich, you're not going to have any food today. Or they might say, we represent the rich, represent the US, you're not going to have any oil. A bad way. Or they could work together. Now, we don't know what that would be like. A global situation of people working without having anybody in control, that's unknown. So, this is a set of predictions to give us a handle on what the future might hold. Then increasing mechanization, we've seen more and more machines. People just, they don't make a coffee, they just put something in, they press a button, the coffee arrives. Well, that's not going to work. People not digging holes, they just press a button, the machine digs it for them. That's going to change, because that needs cheap oil. So, renewable energy is an alternative way of powering things. This is from the Transition Towns meeting that we went to on Saturday. Oil wars, we're seeing them, I think, Iraq, possibly Iran, we don't know. That's going to make an end to cheap oil quicker than anything else. Fighting about oil, blowing up pipelines. So that's what happens if hierarchy wants to keep control of energy. Farming on a decentralized basis, permaculture, very high productivity, but it does take time to get the land off of chemicals. The alternative model, large scale, you're basically killing the land, using oil-based pesticides to destroy anything that doesn't fit the plan, then you're making it fertile by putting in oil-based chemicals again. So it's a total control. And this model, when you're producing it and controlling it all centrally, people will pay a lot of money for food if they haven't got any food. So scarcity is more profitable than abundance if you're using this model. If you're growing your own food, you know, you don't think about this. But the way the world is going, still, small farms are being destroyed and replaced by a large scale. That's going to change. This is a web address of the money system I'm working on. At the moment, there's no software that you can use. I'm only working on the ideas. I'm still writing that software. But there are other alternatives about how money should work. No centralization in the system I'm putting forward, no interest, nobody's forced to do anything. The money which bears interest, we're seeing the collapse of the house price bubble, you're hearing a lot of lies about the money system, that this is like Hurricane Katrina of the financial world, which is nonsense. Their main aim has been to take money from the US taxpayer by saying, well, this is an emergency, and to lower people's ideas of what is possible. So ordinary people feel, well, there is a money crisis. We will have to work harder and get less. That suits the interests of the people who've made the system. Decentralized media. There's a lot of good websites out there with good information. This is an alternative. This is the number of This is US media, and 50 corporations controlled the majority of US media. That was 1983. Now it's down to 5, and it may even be less than 5. But this is, as you say, the way to control people is to control the ideas that can come into their head. And it looks like a diversity. It looks like many different views, because you've got hundreds of different newspapers and channels on the TV, but it's all directed from a very small set of people with the same ideas. Okay, and now they're saying, well, if you just blog on the internet, that should be banned because you need a license, because they want to control it. Different ideas about law and order. More and more things are becoming illegal because, well, particularly about sharing information, taking photographs is now something they're trying to control. So, this is one negative view of how things could go, looking at the way things are tending. More and more poor people in the world, and very few rich, more and more hunger, because they're not fed properly, they're not looked after. Social collapse. This is a bad picture, could happen. I hope it doesn't. Another view of the world is that we can spread information, people will see what is going on. Independence from hierarchy is an essential one, as of course is life and love. Don't be afraid, don't fight. Examine your own ideas. How much of the psychopathic values have you internalized? One of the things I've been doing for many years now is giving away discs and CDs. And it's actually not always easy to give things away, because people think, you say, would you like to have this disc? People's first reaction is, it's a trap. He's trying to sell me something, I don't want it. So just reaching out to people, sometimes it can be very effective. Who's seen Free Hugs? Anybody seen Free Hugs? Okay. Well, just a quick word about Free Hugs, because it's such a simple idea. There was a guy with a sign, holds up, that says, Free Hugs. And if you want a hug, you give him a hug, and he gives you a hug.
Yeah.
And that's it. And that he put on the... It's on YouTube. I'm sure you can find it if you Google it. But he made a great video of this, and he was banned from giving free hugs. Because of insurance. What would happen if somebody hugged him, and then they broke their knee? Now, my understanding of this is that was in a shopping centre in Australia, that they didn't want people having hugs, because if people have hugs, then they're less likely to buy things. Because they're less depressed. Because when people are depressed, they go and they buy things to cheer themselves up. So, it's such a simple idea. It doesn't need any equipment or anything. But that's one example. And so I've been giving out videos of people of the free hugs as well. But telling people about your life, about the things that you've seen that are not right, and how it could be better. Because people need information, they really need encouragement to go against orders. The following orders is the easy thing. And when people have indoctrinated obedience, that's when one person or psychopathic at the top can make the whole organization do terrible things. So this is one for FIRE, reach out to your neighbours, give them presentation. Well, that's not FIRE, but this is international, you know, there's people in Norway and you have neighbours too. Organise together to grow your own food, very important. Fix your neighbour's video. Creatively avoid centralised systems. So if you can feed yourselves without help from the ferry, you're in a very good position to be independent of what is decided in Copenhagen. Conversely, if you can't, well, then you're really in trouble. Try and avoid money, because whenever you're using money, you're paying tribute to the guys who run the money system, because all money has been borrowed and somebody somewhere is paying interest. Now, if people trusted each other, or if people only dealt with people they trusted, they wouldn't need money. That's arguable, but avoid fear. They want people to be afraid, whether it's of Muslims or of each other, and that stops us bonding with one another. That keeps us afraid, thinking little world that we need somebody like the government, the secrets, some large organization to protect us, and avoid power over people. And be ready to have influence on people, but don't try and dominate people. That's a trait of hierarchy. So this is another way that the world could go, not the dangerous Armageddon, but we could realize, let's not have a society about ruling one another, trying to become more powerful, being the fittest and out-competing. We can work together with other people in local communities, which we will be anyway, because we won't have the energy to move things around. So we will necessarily be in local communities, but can we build them first? Can we be ready for the change, not to have things suddenly collapse? Say, oh, well, we didn't notice the trouble of the supply chain because we've been growing our own food for ages. Voluntary relationships instead of people in power hierarchies. Think about how a school relies on children doing what they're told. And think of, I don't work in the school, in fact. I went to visit and I was very impressed, actually, by the freedom that the children have and how well they were looked after. So I wish more government schools were like the FIO school. But that's the end of the presentation. So that's a positive way we could go. My prediction for how it will go, well, I suppose we could have questions. Do you have questions?
How do I know you're not a psychopath?
Well, you have to make your own mind up.
I have to trust you, or?
You do. Nothing I can say will convince you if you think otherwise. Yeah?
For a long time, do you say you act as a teacher? Are you not on the terror list already?
A terror list?
Yeah.
I might be. But I can still act as a teacher until they take me down, you know.
Maybe you're a challenge to the power.
Well, in some ways I am. I hope that I am. You know, if I resolve not to be, well then I'm censoring myself. My vision is that, you know, the people in the oppressive hierarchies, most of them, they're just doing the job and they're just trying to earn money and not create trouble and get money for the wife and kids. But my vision is that we could all be self-actualized. We could all be doing things.
But that's dangerous.
It's risky.
Already,
it's risky. Yes. It's risky. It's risky to go along with them.
And you know, King. You're a king.
Yeah. I mean, these are people that you that are worth looking into. You know, I don't believe the lone gunman theory for 1 minute. Some of my ideas have come from looking at loose ends, bits of history that didn't make sense. And I just, you pull that little piece of history and that thread connects, and then the whole jumper about, oh, the government, they're here to help you, they save you from the crazy guys, it all comes apart and you see something quite different from what you expected. But I needed to see that.
I admire your...
Do you think a human being is born with selfishness?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think they can develop away from it?
Some can.
Isn't that the message of you?
You can see it like that, yes. Yeah. You can say that our culture is very self-centered, short-term, immature. And Martin Luther King said either it's non-violence or non-existence. If we don't decide to do things differently, we've got the potential to wipe out a lot of humanity. But we also could go the other way. And I think more and more people are waking up to the possibilities that we don't actually need this system, which we've all lived through all our lives. We've been told it's necessary. Well, I can see alternative ways.